Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Cooler temperatures and light rain aided firefighters trying to keep flames away from Chena Hot Springs Resort and area homes and cabins. State Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says the Munson Creek fire, last estimated at over 24,000 acres, crept down a hillside to the resort early yesterday.
It's not a big wall of flames or anything like that. The closest it got was about within 100 yards behind the resort. We've got firefighters positioned there to stop it, and they've been successful doing that.
A system of water pumps, hoses, and sprinklers are being used to protect resort structures, as well as dozens of private cabins and homes outside the resort along the last stretch of Chena Hot Springs Road. A state forestry post says water drops from helicopters were used to slow the fire both at the resort and where it's also coming down the hillside near Mile 54 Chena Hot Springs Road. Governor Mike Dunleavy said he was going to veto a $4 billion transfer from the Permanent Fund's earnings reserve to its constitutionally protected principal. But as Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchman reports, his office failed to cross out necessary lines in the state budget.
The budget that the legislature passed and sent to Governor Dunleavy's desk would make a deposit of $4 billion into the constitutionally protected permanent fund. Dunleavy signed the budget bill last Wednesday, but before he did that, he made his line item vetoes, things he wants to cross out from the budget. He thought he had crossed out a big one.
There was a decision by the legislature to move billions of dollars from the earnings reserve of the permanent fund into the corpus of the permanent fund. We stopped that from happening with a veto.
He said he wants to work with the legislature on a comprehensive approach to the permanent fund, including the money in the earnings reserve. The only problem can be found on page 138 of the budget bill. That's the page that deals with the permanent fund. There's a line about paying for administrative costs. Much of it is crossed out, vetoed. Another line that would pay for $525 permanent fund dividends, crossed out, vetoed. And a line about the $4 billion transfer to the corpus, not crossed out, so not vetoed. It means that with the stroke of a pen, or in this case, the lack of one, the amount of permanent fund money that's protected under the state constitution rose from just under $48 billion to nearly $52 billion. But that still leaves nearly $30 billion that is either in the earnings reserve or is locked up in investment gains like real estate that haven't been realized yet. On August 2nd, the legislature is scheduled to convene for the third special session this year. The governor has proposed a constitutional amendment that would protect the remaining amount in the earnings reserve. It also would put the permanent fund dividend in the Constitution. The size of PFDs that Dunleavy is proposing would be based on half of the amount drawn from the fund annually. Currently, that would lead to a dividend of roughly $2,350. But nonpartisan budget analysts estimate it would create annual deficits averaging $1 billion this decade without other changes to policy. A spokesperson for Dunleavy said the $4 billion transfer won't adversely affect his permanent fund proposal, which would, quote, guarantee Alaskans receive their share of the state's resource wealth each year and end the annual debate over the amount of the PFD, end quote. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Former Alaska veterinarian Eric Jane was killed in a motor vehicle accident in North Dakota last week. During his years in Alaska, Jane was well known as the bush vet for his travels around the state, especially to remote villages to care for animals, including providing spay and neuter services. Musher Hugh Neff says Jane often treated animals whose owners could not afford veterinary care.
It was never about the money. In fact, sometimes you would have to tell him, like, hey, I need to give you something for my own peace of mind, because he was just doing it, you know, because he just loved to do what he did. And he'll always have such a profound effect on a lot of our lives just because of the way he treated others.
Neff says Jane helped him out numerous times.
Over the years, I don't know how many neuters and spays he did for me and how many races that he sponsored me for, but I always thought, man, this guy really likes me. And then I talked to, like, I don't know how many people I've talked to in the last couple of days, but he's been doing this for everyone. And, you know, that's what makes him so special is if he did play favorites, he would play favorites for the people that were the underdogs.
Jane left Alaska a decade ago and began working around the lower 48 and beyond, including with the Humane Society and Indian reservations. and was hired as Indigenous Program Medical Director at the global NGO Animal Balance last year. Eric Jane was 61 years old. While bumblebees have declined in parts of the lower 48, they're apparently thriving in Alaska. Alaska Public Media reports that they're even doing well in the high Arctic.
They really evolved to handle the cold better than most insects.
Gemma Tarlak, a senior editor and writer at the Atlas Obscura, wrote about Alaska's bumblebees in a recent article.
Bumblebees are also larger, so that they have more mass and can keep themselves warm, and they are really good at twerking. I know that sounds crazy, but bees in general can detach their flight muscles from their wings and then just vibrate their flight muscles.
That vibrating wiggle, Tarlak says, can generate enough heat to raise a bumblebee's body temperature 30 degrees in about 5 minutes. And while entomologists have every indication bumblebees are thriving in Alaska, Tarlak says a new project aims to compile an Alaska bee atlas to better determine how many bees there really are in the state and where different species are located. She says there's even a chance of finding a new species of bumblebee to add to the 20-plus varieties already known to be here. A local doctor has adopted a new model for treating pain and written a textbook to help others learn the techniques. KiwiC's Robin reports.
Dr. Todd Capistrant became expert in a form of osteopathic medicine called the fascial distortion model. It treats pain coming from the fascia that covers all the muscles and bones in the body.
I usually will try to tell patients it's like a wrinkle or a disruption in that shiny tissue of your body. Everybody knows you can iron something and get it fixed, so why not iron fascia?
The fascia distortion model, or FDM, requires a lot of hands-on treatment, where doctors or therapists might use their own hands to push a patient's muscles apart or smooth out the covering of a muscle.
The idea being that the fascia is the tension in the body, and if the tension is altered, then you have discomfort and you have problems. I saw it do things for patients that I hadn't been trained in my usual osteopathic or family practice training.
Capistrant got interested when colleagues who had just learned the model at a conference treated him for chronic tennis elbow, and his relief was nearly immediate.
Fixed my elbow pain that had failed traditional methods for over 2 years.
The fascial distortion model was introduced by Stephen Tipaldos, who taught the technique until he died in 2006. Capistrant and a handful of American doctors have become expert in the model and started to teach it in weekend-long sessions. Capistrant wrote a book for his patients called Why Does It Hurt? That he still hands out. But there weren't good materials for doctors to learn FDM.
Dr. Topaldis's book is essentially unavailable. And so for years, there's been clamor for, we need a textbook.
Capistrant partnered with Dr. Georg Harar from Austria to write the new book called The Fascia Distortion Model, Philosophy, Principles, and Clinical Applications.
It won't replace a hands-on course, but we hope it'll accompany it very well.
FDM has become a popular pain treatment model in Alaska, where there's a higher proportion of osteopathic doctors, and in the interior, Tanana Valley Clinic has run an osteopathic manipulative medicine clinic for 7 years.
People like to be active here. They do not want to be held down. I really think that's one of the things that led to the growth of our OMM clinic.
But it's not only osteopaths, as MDs and physical therapists also want to learn the techniques. The book is now being translated into Korean. Capistrant will pick up his FDM teaching again this fall. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And I'm Dan Bross.